To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Really? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I am David Thomas, your host for this quarter. By way of introduction, let me just say that this quarter we start a new series of lessons that are going to be focusing on the family. In particular, the rhythms or the events that people go through in their lifetimes. Some of you who listen regularly know that this is a commentary done by the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and our commentary is based on the official Sabbath School lessons of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. If you're interested in seeing the actual pamphlet we work from, you can Google it, Sabbath School Lesson, and you'll find a host of resources there. But this is a commentary made by some professors and associates here, and we enjoy hearing from you from time to time. Let me introduce my two conversation partners. Jen Ogden.
Hello.
Is the children and family pastor at University Church, and Brent Bergling is an associate professor of the New Testament. So, colleagues, we're going to be talking about, in a particular way, families and looking at the Bible to see if what kind of advice or principles can be found there that are helpful to families. And I think all of us know that the word family today has multiple definitions, but biblically speaking, family has a much more narrow definition. Pretty much a father and a mother and children, however might be born. And of course, in the Bible, there are extended family members too, grandparents and uncles and aunts, although some of that terminology is a little vague in the Bible. But the major point that we're going to explore this quarter as we look at the whole thing in a kind of a flyover view is that a family is ideally the primary context in which our lives should be lived. And there's a lot of evidence that we'll talk about along the way, not only from the Bible, but I think from life experience as well, that family is in fact the best agency for human flourishing, presuming that the family is well intact and ordered. In fact, some people have said that the family is so important that the loss of family may equal the loss of a sense of being and place. And so along the way, we'll be looking for some principles and for some good conversation on that whole subject. So the first lesson is actually talking about the various rhythms that we go through in life. And from the perspective of the Bible, the whole story of life begins with Genesis 1, and I'd like for us to talk about that a little bit. I have become a lot more interested in the Genesis 1 and 2 stories lately because I realized some time ago that at the present moment, that story is unfortunately caught up in an endless debate between evolutionists and creationists, and so we miss some of the significances of that story, which actually it tells us about reality. It tells us how life is formed or how it is to be formed. And I don't know what observations you might have about the Genesis stories as it begins the story of life and family. Any comments that you want to make?
Well, if we think about family, Dave, as a combination of people. You can't be a family by yourself. Genesis starts out with God being a plurality because he says, let us make man in our image. And when God makes humans, it's a multiplicity of people, suggesting that God already knows what togetherness and family is all about, maybe from eternity.
Mm. Yeah, so those who are Trinitarians will be interested in what you say because actually, love is not something you can experience by yourself. It has to be done in relationship. So, I'm intrigued by the fact that there are many people today who disbelieve those stories. Particularly, they disbelieve in the existence of God because there's no empirical evidence to prove the story of God. And I think that while agnostics and atheists, for example, tend to use this absence of empirical evidence as reason not to believe in God, I think it's also possible for us to realize that there are evidences from God that are not empirical. And in fact, looking for empirical evidence of God, I think, is a big mistake. I compare it to trying to buy pizza at an auto parts store. You know, there's nothing wrong with pizza, there's nothing wrong with the auto parts store, but the auto parts store doesn't sell pizza and doesn't profess to. And empirical evidence, I think, is based on the material world. And if God is supernatural, you can't find you. It's wrong to even think you can find that. And so, the evidence I think that would count is relational evidence, evidence of self revelation. You know, if I want to get to know you, Jen, I would have to spend time talking to you, listening to you, and even believing you. in some cases.
Lord have mercy.
And only after I risk those things will I come to know whether you are a good or a not so good person, whether you are pleasant, whether you're, and so, you know, when dealing with people, we don't have proof ahead of time. We have proof along the way. And so it seems to me that one of the things we can learn from the Genesis story is precisely that. And the remarkable thing about that story is it tells us what reality looks like. That there are we're in a two-tiered universe. There's a supernatural realm and a natural realm. Mm. And we are creatures in the natural realm. And so that, I think, is of significance. And I don't know what you guys think about it, but the interesting thing about the Genesis story, and I think this is very important to families, is that the material world is not seen as bad. In fact, over and over again, we are told it is good. In fact, it is very good, which is in marked contrast to some of the other ancient beliefs that the material world was somehow a very diminished existence, so the human body was bad. But not the biblical story, that human life is good. It is constituted to be good, you know.
And that man is a unity of body and breath from God, making a living person. Humans are that combination, which means the body, at least originally, as it came from the hand of God in creation, was good. But some of your notes suggest that that hasn't always been the case. We haven't always been perfect. Something happened.
Well, yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's a very good place for us to go here. Is that is life now like it was in Eden? And I think the answer would be no. And the primary reason for that comes from the Genesis 3 story, where there's what theologians refer to as a fall. And I have to say to you that I am amazed at how little play the story of the fall gets these days. You know, it's not a pleasant thing for humans today to think that there's something inherently wrong with us. And yet I would argue that there are there's plenty of empirical evidence that there is a brokenness to human life. It doesn't take long to figure that out. And I know there are some people who like to argue against that, but I don't think you get very far through life before you run into trouble of some kind.
If I'm self-honest, I see the problems in my own life, and it doesn't take me long then to extrapolate that probably others struggle with the same things I do.
And then you look, unfortunately, at history, how evil itself rears its head every now and then. It's kind of difficult. What do you think also about the idea that the creation story teaches us that there is a certain order to life? Is there an order to life, the order to the universe? You know, it seems to me that there is, and I know some people see that as evidence that God, or they like to say that God is in control of everything, and I would dispute that. Because the creation story itself tells us that when God created the world, he the theological term is he mediated to the creation some capacity to self-perpetuate itself. You know? And so there are many things that happen on this planet that are not the direct act of God anymore. They were initially. And I know I've had some people kick back at me, and I like to ask them the question, well, how many times in a given day do you think the will of God is not done on planet Earth? If you believe that God controls everything, and that's a serious question that has a little bit of a bump in it.
I think that Gregory Boyd speaks very clearly to this when he talks in his book, The Benefit of the Doubt. And he speaks about the idea between sovereignty and control. And I think it's very important that we as Christians understand that there's a big difference now between sovereignty and control. And I think that being able to acknowledge that the control of God was unleashed, was given away to other entities. And that's really important for us to keep in mind, that we have willpower and we have the ability to dictate all of these things. So we can choose. We have that ability to choose. And I think sometimes we choose really poorly. Really poorly. Yeah, and sometimes we choose really well.
That's true.
And I think God said, here, you have the ability to make good or evil happen. you choose. And I think he's going to help coach us to the things that are best, and he's going to advocate for us to do the best. But I don't think that he's going to put us under his thumb and kind of crush us into doing the best.
Yeah.
And I think you can see the evidence empirically around us, as you said, that there is a lot of evil. There's also a lot of good.
Yeah. And I don't think you can have the love without the free choice.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come back to that. I want to sneak in here one more thing from the Genesis story, obviously, and that is the fact that we are relational beings. You know, we are relational beings. That, the Genesis 2 story is fascinating because after God created Adam, he came and said to him these famous words, "It's not good for you to be alone." And so we have the beginning of a family system.
Mm-hmm.
And, the lesson would ask us to focus on the fact that there are transitions that we go through life, because life is a journey. It has its own trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And begins with infancy and progresses all the way to old age and even death. But I wonder about this wonderful piece that's attributed to King Solomon, where he talks about to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, and it goes on and on through all kinds of things. Do you think this describes the journey of life?
Certainly is the journey after sin, mm-hmm. And it talks about a time to mourn. I have a hard time seeing some of those things, a time to die being original, but certainly that's our experience now.
Yeah. And I think it is true that all of us pass through these seasons of life. And I, Jen, I like what you pointed out too, that our choice, our capacity to choose actually determines to a large extent the outcome of our living. Now, sometimes there are things that are done to us against our will. I wonder if people could bring to mind some experiences that they have had where they've learned some of the lessons about the journey of life. But anyway, I thank you for being here today as we get started with this, looking at the whole story of the human journey. I think if we see the Genesis story as formative and also normative, we then have a structure, we have a story of where we began, we have a very clear indication that we need to be relational, that we thrive best in relationships. You have the initial structure of marriage, and so I think that as believers we have a very good beginning. We don't have to feel like we are left to wander aimlessly through the universe.
That's very true.
Yeah. So my thanks to you, Jen, and to Brant for joining me this quarter, and my thanks to Brad Williams, who is our technician. We look forward to associating together as the weeks go by. For The Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.